Good afternoon.
Your last one is going 4 hours after special.
How is everyone doing? How many lawyers are in the room? How many judges? Okay, the panel, okay. How many Star Wars fans? Outstanding. Well, let's talk about the law and Star Wars. My name is Joshua Gilliland, and I'm one of the co-founders of the Legal Geeks. At my far left is Jessica Meterson, our co-founder, and we are here to moderate a fantastic panel with these amazing judges, and let's meet them and see the geek swag in their chambers. Jessica?
So we are lucky to have a fantastic panel of judges with us, and yes, you can tell that they are all geeks and have their geek credentials. There's Judge Owens of the Ninth Circuit. Hi, Judge Owens. We have Federal Magistrate Judge Stacey Beckerman here with us again. Hi, Judge. We have Federal Magistrate Judge Mitch Denbum from right here in San Diego. We have California State Judge Carol Nahara with us again. Huge Comic-Con fan. And all the way from New York City, the biggest Star Wars geek I know, Judge Chirino. Hi, Judge.
Well, let's jump into the legal issues from The Last Jedi and Solo. So first, did Luke Skywalker have a legal obligation to save the galaxy from the First Order? Maybe. You see, the law states you don't have a duty to rescue unless you have a special relationship or you create a hazard of some kind. Well, Luke failed would-you-kill-baby-Palpatine test, meaning that he unleashed Kylo Ren across the universe because he was the one who stood over Kylo with the lightsaber that pushed him over the edge. Unfortunately, if you were to wake up and somebody is standing over you with a lightsaber, the correct response is, dude, what's going on? You don't go on a murder spree. So that's what Kylo did, and that was the wrong result. So does he have a legal obligation? Probably not, because that's a really, really big burden to say, well, because you created a genocidal maniac, you now have a duty to save the galaxy from him. But we know how The Last Jedi ended, and that was pretty awesome. So let's talk about the fact that the First Order just executes people by beheading them without a trial. And Jessica, let's talk about that.
Well, Judge Chirino, you're a criminal law expert, so I want to know, is this okay that the First Order has apparently just brought back executions by stormtroopers?
First of all legal advice is general in nature. And if you find yourself in a galaxy far, far away, seek local counsel. Next slide. As you can see, this is an actual issue that militaries deal with, including our own in the United States. Next slide. Under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, there are 14 crimes that subject you to death. 10 of these can happen at any time, including mutiny, sedition, spying, rape. Clearly, Finn was spying when he was aboard the Supremacy. Next slide. 4 of these must be during actual wartime. They include desertion or willfully disobeying a superior officer who gives a lawful order. Judge Denbum will be talking about some of these issues as they apply to Poe later on and come for our mock trial later to hear them really explored out. Next slide. But unlike Phasma or the efficiency of the First Order, you must have a trial, a courts martial. 2/3 of the members are enough for a conviction, but they need all members unanimously for a sentence of death. That decision is automatically appealed and then must actually be confirmed by our president.
Let's talk about the, since that's joyful, let's talk about the fun issue of impersonating imperial officers versus First Order officers. And Circuit Judge Owens, is there a legal difference?
I think there is, and often as a lawyer, you have to provide good counsel, and if I were going to be counseling the Empire, you know, you're always building these Death Stars, all these very resource-intensive things to try to crush the rebellion. There are easier ways to do it. I mean, imagine HR on the Death Star and the change orders for the Death Star, and then there's then there's another Death Star, you know. Let's keep it simple. So there is a much simpler tool to crush the rebel scum. 18 U.S.C. 912. If someone is falsely pretending to be an officer and acts as such, that's a felony. So think how many times you could nail Luke Skywalker or Han Solo with this. You don't need to send those big battle cruisers out there. Just arrest him for this. Now, the law, unfortunately, has its limits for the empire. And again, as a lawyer, you have to be clear, because the empire, solid government, okay, maybe not good government, but it's the government. First order. Probably not a government entity, so then I would have to say, yeah, Death Star, all that other stuff. You probably have to do that. But again, try to be creative as a lawyer. Try to save your client money. This is a much more cost-effective way to crush the rebellion.
All right, well, let's turn to civil law for a moment. And Ray, Judge Demon, was she negligent with her lightsaber?
So the question is not whether she can be sued by the caretakers for destroying their cart. She can. Anybody can be sued for anything. The real question, which I know you're itching to hear the answer to, is what standard will apply in the context of that litigation? What is negligence in the context of using a lightsaber to cut a boulder in half and having it fall on a cart down below and crush it? So there's first ordinary negligence, which is a person has to use reasonable care to prevent harm to oneself or others. You're negligent if you do something a reasonably careful person wouldn't do. And on this standard, would a reasonably careful person who was cutting a boulder in half look to see where it might go when it came off? If that's the standard that applies, you know, maybe Ray has a chance of avoiding liability. But
go to the next slide, please. Oh, you're there.
If the use of a lightsaber or practice with a lightsaber, if the lightsaber itself is a dangerous thing, then the standard of care goes up and you have to use extreme caution. I don't know that any of us would say that Ray used extreme caution. I mean, she didn't even look over the edge. Finally, if use of a lightsaber is ultra-hazardous activity, which it might be, that thing cuts and cauterizes, then she has strict liability and is responsible. My advice to Ray would be to settle, and if she chooses not to bring her checkbook to the trial.
Judge Beckerman, let's talk about illegal underground droid fighting and the rights issues that happen from forcing droids to fight each other like they're animals.
I know it was difficult for all of us to watch the underground droid fighting scene. Can we hold the organizers criminally responsible for those underground droid fights? Three laws come to mind. It is against the law to engage in dogfighting, cockfighting, and forced human labor. First, the dogfighting statute. Turns out it's against the law to cause a dog to fight another dog for amusement or gain. It's a felony. Public service announcement, if you watch a dog fight, you can also be held liable for a misdemeanor. Cockfighting is also against the law. You can't fight your rooster or any other animal with the intent that those roosters be used in an exhibition of fighting. That's a misdemeanor. Third law is human trafficking, much more serious. That makes it unlawful to violate someone's personal liberty to obtain forced labor. That's a felony. You can be in jail for up to 12 years. So do any of these statutes protect our adorable, sweet droids who are forced to fight in these underground fights? Well, a droid's not a dog, so that doesn't apply. And although we like to think of droids as human, the statute defines a person as a natural person or caused by nature, so we can't fit the droids into that definition. But the cockfighting statute protects both birds and other animals and defines animal to mean every dumb creature. There's actually a case that discusses the interpretation of every dumb creature. And the judge who wrote that is a California judge who looked to Webster's Dictionary, as we often do, for definitions, and defined dumb as by nature incapable of human speech, and creature as something created. And in that holding, the judge said, every dumb creature plainly includes roosters and other birds, but doesn't include droids. And I will tell you here today, yes, droids can qualify under the law as a dumb creature because they were created, so they're a creature, and they're incapable of human speech, so they are qualified as dumb creatures, and so they would receive the protection of California's animal cruelty statutes. You heard it here first.
So if there are any producers of BattleBots here, we probably can arrange representation for you, producers of BattleBots. So.
Well, let's pivot over to Solo and the wonderful issues of train robbing, because this was a problem in the 19th century, and we came down hard on train robbery. And this judge, appointed by Theodore Roosevelt for the territory of New Mexico, really drove home the issue with describing train robbers as bands of desperate men determined upon the accomplishment of their purpose, and nothing will prevent the consumption of their design, not even the necessity to take human life. We were not okay with this. So let's take a look, Judge Nahara, on train robbing and train wrecking.
Well, had Han, Sui, Chewy, the rest of the Beckett gang been caught and prosecuted by the Galactic Republic, it's no doubt that a Galactic prosecutor would have charged them with both train robbery and train wrecking. A Galactic prosecutor would come forward and state that they were guilty of train robbery because they had met all of the elements of train robbery. Now, elements, for those of you who don't know, are a set of facts that must be proved with every crime beyond a reasonable doubt before anyone can be convicted of that crime. Now, for train robbery, the set of facts would be that you'd need an individual or a gang, which you have, that boarded a train, an engine, a car engine, or any type of moving locomotive with the intention of robbing a passenger or someone in charge of the loot, in this case, the coaxium. Now, the interesting thing about train robbery, and this goes back to what Josh was talking about, how vile and what scoundrels we thought train robbers were at one time, is you don't actually have to get away with the loot to be convicted of train robbery. That's the only kind of robbery where you don't have to get away with the loot. In this case, the defense would argue, no. In the surveillance videos that we are using to prosecute these folks, did anyone ever actually see a human being? Think about it. They would argue it's just a really, really elaborate burglary. Now, the prosecution would then come back and say, well, in that case, he's not looking at 9 years. He's looking at death. And the reason is because they would come back and say that all of the elements of train wrecking have been met. And train wrecking is if you remove a rail, or in this case, an entire car from a train with the intent to derail it, and in this case, you do have to derail it, you are guilty of train wrecking. And the penalty for train wrecking is life without possibility of parole. And if someone dies in that train wrecking, you're looking at the possibility of a death penalty. Once again, the defense would argue, wait, they didn't have the intention to derail that train. They intended simply to steal. The fact that derailing is a natural and probable consequence of taking out an entire train, well, that isn't what the law says. And a lot of these defense attorneys would argue strict interpretation of the law. My opinion is they wouldn't prevail, and Han and Chewy and everyone else would have gone off for life without possibility of parole, at least, or death. And Lando Calrissian, on the bright side, would have been the star in The New Hope.
All right, well, Judge Owen, can we have some fun now talking about taxes?
Well, we all know that the overriding theme of Star Wars, the word you always hear, is tax. And we all know that. If we go to the next slide, Josh, this is serious. And now I sense some skepticism here, so I hate to do this, but Josh, can you bring up the opening crawl of The Phantom Menace, please? Sorry. Right there, second look right there. The taxation of trade routes. Now, that should have been the first giveaway. That was going to be a horrible movie right there. All right? I mean, you don't even need to get the Jar Jar. That should have been the tense there. But sorry for bringing that movie up, but I had to do it. But in all seriousness, if you think about it, Solo, Calrissian, Chewbacca, their business model is based on smuggling to avoid taxes, right? So that's a big part of what happens in Star Wars. So we know taxes are real. And if you're a tax lawyer, maybe you have a client like Lando Calrissian. And so he comes to you and says, whoa, boy, rough night at the table. You know, I usually always win magically when I play Sobek, but this time I happened to lose. And you can, as a tax attorney, often you have to deliver bad news, but this time you can deliver good news. You can say, Lando, I'm sorry you lost the ship, but here's the good news. That's a huge write-off. That's a huge write-off. You can write off that ship against any tax or any gambling wins. And since apparently you always win when you play cards, you can have a tax offset. Now, unfortunately for Lando, the offset is limited to gambling winnings. So if he's making money on smuggling, you can't offset against that. So it's only against the gambling winnings. But still not a total loss for our good friend. And he's having a good time there. He must have just gotten that advice from the tax attorney. So he's doing all right.
Now what about the dry cleaning costs for capes? Could those be claimed?
You know, there's actually a lot of case law on uniforms. Mm-hmm. There's quite a bit of case law on uniforms. And frankly, I could talk the rest of the time, but I won't do that. But yes.
Awesome. Let's give a little preview for tonight, Judge Devin.
So I'm sure you have heard that Captain Poe Dameron has been accused of mutiny, insubordination, failure to follow orders. What's left of the resistance is trying to reestablish the rule of law. And I was selected as the judge for his court-martial. It will occur tonight at 8 o'clock in this very room. Now, I can't say a lot about it because, of course, I am the judge. But for those of you who have watched the movie, there is some rather compelling evidence that Captain Dameron did, in fact, disobey orders and also committed mutiny. I don't know the extent of the defense that will be raised on his behalf. I've heard very good things about the defense lawyers. And we'll have to see whether their defense really goes to the merits or whether they're just making a slow sentencing argument. Once again, I don't know how this will come out. But mutiny carries the death penalty. So, we shall see. For those of you who will be there, I do intend to poll the audience for an advisory vote as to guilt or innocence. And then I also, if there's time, intend to poll the audience about an appropriate sentence. The final decision, of course, is mine. I look forward to seeing you.
So, Judge Beckerman, technology is getting scarier every day, but what happens in the Last Jedi scares me a lot. Is it legal to force Skype people together?
In the Last Jedi, we saw two minds bridged by Snoke. And the real question here is, what laws were not broke? Call it what you want, force bond, force Skype, force time. But both Kylo Ren and Rey were committing many a crime. Let's start with invasion of privacy, which requires looking through an opening or hole with intent to invade someone's privacy. Yes, Kylo Ren invaded Rey's soul. Guilty. Move on to criminal battery, also a crime, of course, defined as a willful and unlawful use of violence or force. Willful use of the force, guilty again. Then there's a more serious assault involving unwanted touching of an intimate body part, but Kylo Ren only touched Rey's hand, and well, according to some, her heart. But neither hands nor hearts qualify as intimate body parts under the law, so not guilty. What about indecent exposure when Ben when Ben Solo removed his shirt? Nope, a man's chest is not a private part, and it's not against the law to flirt, except when it is. Not guilty. Let's hone in on the First Order and the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. Did Kylo Ren illegally intercept Rey's private thoughts? Oh, he sure did. That's a fact. Guilty. And what about the Fourth Amendment? Did he illegally search Rey's mind? Yes, he needed a warrant to perform that search. And that's not a warrant I would have signed. Finally, let's turn to civil rights. The Civil Rights Act of 1871 is our source, and it prohibits government actors from using excessive force. Excessive force, yes. But what about the Supreme Leader? He, Snoke, created the link. Would the aid and abet statute land him in the clink? Well, if just connecting people is illegal, then Facebook and Tinder would be broke. So in the event Snoke's still alive, hashtag free Snoke.
Judge Nahara, how about that Crimson Dawn? They don't seem like such a bad group. Can you prosecute them for anything?
Let's look at Crimson Dawn. Crimson Dawn is a criminal organization under the control of a former Sith Lord. Its day-to-day operations are carried out by his top man, Dryden Vos, and its employees are street-level gangsters, like the Beckett Gang. With that said, Title 18, Section 1961 to 1968 of the U.S. Code provides for what we call extended penalties for people who engage and perform as part of an ongoing criminal organization. In fact, RICO stands for Racketeering, Influenced, and Corrupt Organizations. Racketeering is just a fancy word for dishonest or fraudulent business dealings. So in answer to the question, can Crimson Dawn be prosecuted under RICO? The answer does appear to be a resounding yes. We have a criminal organization, no question about it. We have a criminal organization that has engaged in a pattern of crimes that under RICO we view as racketeering. In this case, we have surveillance video that many of us have seen of gambling, robbery, and specifically smuggling of certain types of items. In this case, RICO specifically talks about biological weapons, chemical weapons, and nuclear weapons. Now, come on, Coaxium, what do you think? I suspect it's going to fall into one of those categories. So all that the government has to prove, the Republic, that is that they have engaged in a pattern of racketeering, that they've done two or more of what we call predicate acts. That is, two or more of these crimes in the past 10 years. And with that done, that shows that they're involved in a pattern of racketeering. Now, from the secretly recorded surveillance videos that came from a warrant, in fact, signed at one point by one of, I was going to say Judge Beckman, but signed by one of the judicial Republic officers, we know that they discussed the fact that they have been engaging in gambling, in robbery, and in smuggling. So it's an ongoing racketeering enterprise. What this means is that not only can their crimes be enhanced by as little as 20 to up to life imprisonment, but all of the proceeds, all of the money, everything they've got goes to the government. So they don't have to worry about those taxes because ultimately they're all going to get it. And that is why, yes, they can be prosecuted under the RICO Act.
Let's talk about the first time Han shot first. Judge Chirino, your thoughts.
Well, first of all, this movie made it really easy. There's no debate as to whether Han shot first or not. Now, I would say, since I was 9 years old when I saw the original in the theater, there is also no debate that Han shot first. Next slide. Legally, we call this issue justification. Normal people, non-lawyers, call it self-defense. In New York, and in most jurisdictions, you may use deadly physical force when you reasonably believe it is necessary to defend yourself or your favorite Wookiee companion if you reasonably believe someone is going to use deadly physical force against you or your favorite furball. Next slide. Deadly physical force means force that is capable of causing death or serious physical injury. The reasonable belief is measured in a two-part test. We like two-part and three-part tests in the law. Next slide. First, Han must have believed that Beckett was about to use deadly physical force against him or Chewie, and that it was necessary to use deadly physical force to defend himself or Chewie. And two, a reasonable person, which is usually what the jury is for in this type of case, in the same position would have had the same belief. In a quick aside, where some states differ is the duty to retreat. Mm-hmm. My state, a normal, rational state, has a duty to retreat. Some states, like the one we are in now, does not have a duty to retreat.
But we have an evidence code and you don't.
We don't. Yeah. But our chief judge has just decided she's going to make one, and we are suggested that we follow it. So I say we'll have one shortly.
Good.
The only place in New York where there is not a duty to retreat is in your home.
So we went through this at light speed, which was a depart from last year. But I have some questions prepared, and we will take questions from the audience so you can start lining up. And remember, none of this is binding legal advice, so don't ask anything crazy. While the line's getting ready, question for the panel. What's the effect of Lando's cheating on the enforceability of that gambling debt?
Pick someone.
Judge Beckerman.
I think it has a huge impact. I mean, definitely. The cheating really negates it completely, in my opinion.
Exactly. The entire legal system of the Old West was based on whether you cheated on cards.
And if nobody caught that, the Ninth Circuit just agreed with me, which doesn't always happen.
Well, remember, this is one judge in the Ninth Circuit. You need
We're
another
on video,
one.
Though, man.
You need another
two.
One. You need two.
Two out of three.
Wait, couldn't you actually argue, though, that his Lando's breach, because they still honor the contract, the other party, that Han could choose to ignore that breach and enforce the contract anyway?
I think that we'd have to know of the cheating.
Nah. Okay.
First question.
Hi. I think this is... Okay, it's on. Hi, my name's Addie, and I know we established earlier that Luke Skywalker did not have an obligation to save the galaxy. However, can his disappearance and hiding be penalized for tax evasion?
Tax question.
Judge Owens?
So, as a U.S. citizen, you always have a requirement to file a tax return. Now, even if he doesn't earn any income, he's required to file, so possibly he could be prosecuted for misdemeanor failure to file. But if you're going to go after Luke Skywalker, you want to go a little heavier than a misdemeanor. That's why I like that 18 U.S.C. 912, because that's, you know, that's a felony you can hang on the guy. But no, you can, you know, as long as he files his returns every year, he will be okay. It doesn't look like he was doing it, though. So he is exposed to misdemeanor liability.
Thank you. Next question.
This question is for the lady with the Star Wars hat. You said that Kylo Ren was invading, what's her name's?
Rey's.
Rey, thank you. Someone's invading my head right now. Wasn't he being forced to do so without knowing that he was doing it? And since he was kind of already in her space, he was not, there was no... what's the word? I'm spacing.
Intent.
Intent? Intent, or another word for intent. Anyways, and then you said the guy with the freaky face.
Snoke.
I know all this, I swear. You say free him because if he invented the he didn't really invent the Force. He was just using the Force, so he didn't invent it. He was using it. So I think that he's guilty. Not intent. God damn, it was another word.
No, but you're actually exactly right. Are you a lawyer?
Should I be? Damn.
He's unsure.
I can't even remember my name when I'm in front of a microphone. I don't think I do.
Well, you actually raise a really good point with regard to the criminal invasion of privacy. The defendant must have the intent to invade the privacy of the person or persons into wherever they're looking. And so you are right. If the Force bond was made by Snoke and he had nothing to do with it and he really couldn't help himself but see what he saw, likely would not be held, be found guilty by the jury of criminal invasion of privacy. So that's actually a really good point. So it'd be like if you were walking down the street and you looked in someone's house and saw something you really weren't supposed to see, you know, you didn't really mean to. The door was already open. The window was already open. And so that's actually a really good point. You should perhaps enroll in law school.
Hi, my name's Alex. My question is, would the First Order be qualify as a criminal organization or as a paramilitary organization, and therefore would they have any legal standing to attack the resistance and their fleet of ships?
Or a religious organization? That's been my question the whole time, too. Yeah.
Or just terrorists?
I'd argue that the First Order was a criminal organization. They seem to be involved in a lot of the acts that are there, like 32 or 36 acts, you can Google it, under RICO that talks about what criminal organizations do, and a lot of those things are things that we've seen the First Order do. And if they're not a government sanction, if there is no government, so there's no government sanctioned entity, and they're not a military, and even if they're a paramilitary organization, they can still be a criminal organization. The Hells Angels thought of themselves as a paramilitary organization, and they were successfully prosecuted under RICO. So under that same theory, I would say, yes, you could prosecute them under RICO if they don't have any kind of government standing.
And there are many organizations that start out as paramilitary or loosely knit in some way, maybe even conceived of as terrorists by some, mm-hmm. that end up ultimately becoming governments. Mm-hmm. The United States is a good example of a terrorist organization revolting against their overlords at the time and ultimately forming a government. So the answer may depend upon where in their evolution the First Order was at the time of these events.
And who ultimately is the victor of the war. Right. Because the reality is the victor of the war gets to kind of rewrite the historical consequences and actions that they took. So if the First Order becomes the legitimate government of the Republic, they clearly will deem themselves to have always been the legitimate government of this galaxy.
Yeah, think of them as neo-imperials. Yes, sir.
So one thing you didn't touch on is, what is the legal justification, if any, for the Death Star's destruction of Alderaan?
None, it's a war crime. So when you get into the purpose targeting civilians in order to make a, you know, just for murder, that violates the Geneva Convention, and that's a war crime. Yeah. The only time that civilians can be targeted in war is if the other side did it first. So the Germans doing the Blitzkrieg on London, they targeted civilians first, so we bombed German targets that were where civilians lived. Same with Japan, because they what they did in China. So Alderaan did nothing. And was a target, and Tarkin wanted to make a point. You don't get to do that. That's a war crime. That's kind of like saying the only way to stop the rebels is to take out their families. And if that disturbs you, it should.
Hi, Your Honors. I'd like to know if the Jedi Council has any legal justification for taking a child slave into a war zone.
Yeah, we didn't touch on that for a lot of reasons.
I will say that it does raise some interesting questions. Religious organizations, and one may perhaps view the Jedi Order as a religious organization, have a lot of freedoms under the First Amendment, and if you're in the United States under our Constitution, to do things and act in certain ways regarding discrimination, regarding bias, that regular organizations, not religious organizations, can't do. So the question is the Jedi Order a religious organization that's protected? Is its status protected under the law? And is this particular action such that it's within the scope of reasonable religious activity? It's a tough one.
There's another issue with you have a constitutional right to raise your kids the way you want to, and if there's mandatory adoption laws that you lose your parental rights because of your child's midichlorian count, that would be against our Constitution for if we just start conscripting children based upon blood type. So it's a really weird issue, and we haven't jumped into it for a whole bunch of reasons.
Thank you. That's good.
So my name's Charles, and I have a question kind of follow up on that. We see in the Old Republic, the Jedi is pretty much state-sanctioned. They're supported by the Republic. They persecute the Sith. So would there be some First Amendment issues regarding how they treat the Sith? Do the Sith qualify as a religion? And flip the script, when they purge the Jedi Temple, is that the same issue going on there?
Anyone want to jump on that grenade?
I would deem the Sith to also have been a religion and a religious order. And I have quite a nice Sith temple in my chambers. And I think that persecution of the Sith arguably would be if they had a constitutional protection of them. Clearly, the Jedi would argue otherwise and say that they have the right to wipe them from the face of the galaxy. But I would say that they would have the right to religiously exist and be free from persecution. Likewise, the new empire, when it was formed, I don't think would have had the right to wipe out the Jedi and the Jedi Temple because they would have been entitled to some religious protections as well.
Thank you.
Now, an argument could be made, though, that the Sith wasn't a religious organization. It was a cult, mm-hmm. much like Waco or much like Jonestown, because of the nature of what they espoused and what they did. And if it was accepted that it was a cult, it probably could be prosecuted, or depending on the crimes that they did, and they probably could send the Jedi out after them, much like they have. The FBI has gone after cults and... You know, we would have prosecuted anyone who would have survived Jonestown.
One person's cult is another person's religion.
Exactly.
Again, it depends on who writes the history.
Exactly.
So in a similar vein, I was actually going to come up here and ask if you guys could delve a little deeper into the question of whether the Jedi Order and or the Sith Order do qualify as religions based on the various technicalities under the law. And if all of that is true, then... Like, if we look at the Star Wars movies and, like, taking into account, right, who writes the history, but if the Sith are actively persecuting the Jedi, what are the procedures for, you know, if you have, like, a religious organization / cult that says that part of its core religious belief is that another religious organization not exist?
So it's pretty clear, because even in the, even Darth Vader admits, well, he was accused of slavish devotion to this old religion. Mm-hmm. So worship of the Force sounds like a religion. Now, it may take different forms, the form of the Jedi or the form of the Sith, and perhaps other forms. So if you accept the Force as an object of religious desire and adulation, then anyone who follows it is practicing a religion. And there are rules, though, about how far a religion can go, but I would posit that both the Sith and the Jedi are religions on that. Of course, I made my own definition and said they fit it. But that's what judges do.
You know, I would also suggest that in these movies they don't really discuss it, but there really should be more of a separation between the church and the state. And the fact that these religions are all pseudo governmental entities is very odd. It is definitely a galaxy far, far away.
I think the tougher question is, could we force a group of stormtroopers to make a wedding cake with a Jedi symbol on top?
That's right. That is
a good question.
In the question, if Luke Skywalker had a legal obligation to save the galaxy, the law states that to have the legal obligation to save someone from peril, you have to have a special connection. Now, wouldn't the Force count as a special connection?
You're hired.
Likewise, we think that we hope law school is in your future.
You might deserve a seat up here right now.
Who's your mother?
We don't even know how to answer that question.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So Mace Windu has gone on record saying that the Jedi Order is not a military organization, as a group of peacemakers. However, we have seen Republic troops, both clone or otherwise, follow the orders of the Jedi. Does a Republic Republic soldier, clone, or otherwise, have a legal obligation to follow an order from a Jedi Knight or Master?
Well, look historically at the Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the Middle Ages, the Church sent soldiers into the Middle East to convert the heathen. And so we had soldiers acting at the behest of a religious leader. So conceivably, by that measure, the leaders of the Jedi Council, a Jedi, could control troops that were assigned to them for a Republic purpose.
I think of Joan of Arc. She led troops into battle, and she was a religious leader. It didn't work out well for her, but...
I just wish the Jedi Council could figure out that Palpatine was the Emperor. I mean, I don't know why that's so hard. I mean, he's the same guy. I mean, come on. I've never understood that. Why the Jedi Council, the Jedi Clueless, is what they should be called.
Blinded by our little Rey.
What's the Porg's name?
Porg.
Okay.
I haven't made up for a name for him yet, so.
Oh, well.
So I have a question about this porg. So is it legal to cook a porg when you can keep it as pets?
There does not seem to be a lot of porg in the galaxy with the exception of this planet. So I would say that they'd be protected as endangered species or at least under the various treaties between the United States and Canada that protect bird life, et cetera. So I would, but I'm a vegan, so that might bias my answer a little bit, but I would certainly protect your pork.
And remember, the Imperials fed Chewbacca people on Mimbar, so.
Way to go, Dark.
Now this next speaker or questioner is the prosecutor in the Poe trial. So right now we're telling him he cannot get any advisory opinions as to how the trial is going to go from my learned colleague over here. But this, other than that, it's all yours, Tom.
This is for Judge Denbin, and I'm Major Harper with the Resistance Office of the Prosecutor. I have this is unorthodox, and I don't mean this to be ex parte communication, but I have a preliminary motion for the trial. Seems that there are a lot of folks in here biased in favor of Captain Dameron. Seeing that we want an impartial jury, I'd like to challenge that these folks not be allowed to clap in favor of Poe in the trial. I suspect that will help the prosecution's chances, but I just want a fair trial. That's all I want.
You didn't just help yourself in that regard.
Hi. In the original trilogy, could the Ewoks be charged with booby trapping, and could C-3PO be charged with inciting violence?
How about being charged with cannibalism?
Yeah. And terrorism.
They're war criminals.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the Ewoks' planet was invaded.
Right. It was invaded by the government.
The cuteness defense is not recognized under the law.
Which is unfortunate.
Yes. If you hurry, we can get you all in, so go ahead.
Oh.
Is it okay for the rebellion to withhold their troops from leaving the ship in The Last Jedi when they were being chased from the First Order?
You have a duty to follow legal orders, so yes.
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah. Great question.
Yeah.
Another future lawyer.
We like questions we can answer.
Yeah.
I had a question about whether the Republic should be allowed to endlessly clone individuals and, like, inevitably send them out into war to die.
We don't really have a lot of precedent for that. So the great state of Missouri has banned human cloning, so it depends on what the local laws are. Mm-hmm. And it raises very complex issues of 13th Amendment issues for indentured servitude to breed people for war. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be unconstitutional, but that's my opinion, and I'm just a lowly attorney. So,
if you're a fan of the Altered Carbon series, which is out on Netflix, you'll see a very different approach to cloning. And bodies are called sleeves, that we just wear them. and get to transmit our consciousness to other sleeves. So that in that universe, cloning is a very, very different concept than what we see in Star Wars.
But I do have to say this is one of the reasons why I love sci-fi, because so many of the issues we see in Star Wars with the cloning, certainly with the droids and droid rights, as Solo dealt with, are issues that we're going to have to be dealing with very soon here. And in fact, in some circumstances, like with droid rights, we are beginning to. So one of the things I wanted to mention earlier is, for example, Saudi Arabia has actually recognized a robot as a full citizen there, which, of course, brings into question its rights versus human rights of or human women or migrant workers there. But these are all issues, or a lot of these issues, we're going to be facing in the very near future, and I hope we make some better decisions than they did in a galaxy far, far away.
So we have about 90 seconds left, so make it quick.
All right, my question is, was it illegal for the Empire to destroy Alderaan under the principles of jus cogens?
No.
Another easy one, that was good.
Hello. Hello, I'm a visitor from the planet Hoth. Norway.
It's much warmer here.
I have a question. Anger leads to the dark side. Luke know that. Can he be judged by in anger with his lightsaber trying to kill Rey as a tutor and master? Master-student relations?
I would say that he would certainly not be allowed to kill, maim, or hurt his student in any way. If you take some, you know, the argument, if you can go back in time and kill Hitler, would you? That clearly is the ethical conundrum that they're trying to raise there. But just strict legal, teacher cannot harm a student.
Yep. There's every chance that had Luke survived and any of the students survived, that his teaching credential may have been revoked. Yes.
So we want to end on a high note about the positivity of fandom, because we all grew up watching Star Wars and it's impacted our lives. And just for a little peek, you know, here's it bringing joy. So,
oh, adorable.
So one on the left is a judge. The one on the right went for Mom of the Year and is now a judge. And that's me probably looking the happiest back in Christmas of 1980, because I love that AT-AT. Because, you know, we have to be forward-looking. All of us have great memories, but it's about all the youth in the audience who are growing up with this generation of Star Wars now, or those who grew up with the prequels as their Star Wars, that's supposed to bring us all together and make us happy. So tune in tonight at 8 o'clock for a mock trial. And if you want to follow us on social media, here's everything. See you around, kid.